Thank you so much, Bradley, for taking the time today. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I think your company Roll is doing some super interesting things in the crypto space. You've got a very interesting story yourself. For anyone who may not be familiar with you or with your company, I think the best place to get started would just be to walk through your story a little bit from as early as you're willing to go to where you are today working with Roll.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jake. Let's see, a good place to start. I guess as good a place as any is around 2015. So I was hired by Ryan Selkis, who is now an investor in Roll, actually, to lead research at CoinDesk. There weren't many people touching crypto at that time, and CoinDesk was around five people. So I was a huge fan of a researcher and I think former investor named Mary Meeker, who put together these large reports called the State of the Internet Report. Now I believe it's called Internet Trends. And I mirrored that title and created a report called the State of Blockchain Report. So it was quarterly, as a 100-page report that included anything you needed to know in the space at that time. GitHub commits per blockchain, some data on mining. It was really fun and became known through those reports a little bit. At the same time, I was moonlighting with a few venture capital firms and wrote a book on how to get into venture capital. Coincidentally, that book did really well and became a number one bestseller on Amazon in the venture capital section, and allowed me to like tour the US as an author. And also around this time, I was very excited about Ethereum. I just finished a State of Blockchain report all about Ethereum, so around like 2016. And I immediately realized that this thing could change the web instrumentally, and specifically the future of digital community. And so we wanted to create a way in which the 50 million plus creators across the web can quite seamlessly take part in Web3 in a way that is very specific to their community. What we like to say at Roll is that digital communities have their own culture and fan behavior. They even have their own language in terms of GIFs, memes, inside jokes. Maybe there's a name for the nation as well. And what we really give them is their own economics, their own capital that's specific to that nation. And it's happening in real time. We're really excited about where we are today. Roll has around a little over 300 creators. We have some really great investors, and I'll dive into some of the market data as well.
Great. Yeah, we definitely want to spend some time talking about Roll. You mentioned the book. I want to talk about that a little bit as well. But before we get to any of that, I know you wanted to start in 2015, but I want to go a little bit earlier just because, you know, 2015, like you said, Ryan Selkis finds you and you know, brings you over to CoinDesk to do the report. How did he know, you know, you'd obviously been involved probably in some sort of public fashion in crypto up to that point for him to be able to kind of find you and take you on? You know, when, what was the earlier days of crypto like for you? Like, when did you start paying attention? What kind of, you know, were you putting content out there independently? How did he know, like, yeah, this is the guy I want to bring on board to start writing a major piece?
Oh, yeah. So around this time, I was always really curious about venture capital. Definitely not anymore. But yeah, so I was working for a few venture capital firms, and I was the Bitcoin guy at like a few different firms. People would, you know, ping me and just try and get thoughts on trends or, you know, what's happening in the space. Why did China ban Bitcoin? Around the time, all these different things. So I put together like a pretty wide ranging report on Bitcoin for a specific firm, and they really liked it. And they offered me a gig and actually turned it down because I was so into Bitcoin at the time that I just wanted to dive in full time. And every single major source of that report was from CoinDesk, and I didn't, I knew enough that I needed to, you know, follow the road. And so I was like, I need to find out what this CoinDesk thing is about. And so I got in contact with Ryan, and yeah, it's sort of the beginning of how I got into the space.
That's That's awesome. And I applaud you for saying no, because that's, you know, obviously just by the sheer demand for your book, a lot of people are super interested in getting to venture capital. And to say no to what I assume was a pretty attractive offer definitely takes a lot of courage and confidence in the path that you were already on. Yeah. When you just to like clarify, you wrote this book, Breaking into VC. Were you actually ever in VC in like a formal, you know, full-time role, or were you just kind of interacting with a lot of these VCs about like Bitcoin, like you said, and from that you gained, and obviously like you got an offer, you were totally qualified to write about this like you did, but did you actually ever spend time like fully in VC?
Yeah, for sure. So below the, I guess, VP level, you could sort of work part-time as like a scout or an analyst or an associate. So I did this with a few different firms, and sort of got a taste for what it was like. And at the end, just realized I was 10 times more excited to start a company than sort of log companies. The firm I was interested in working with, particularly in the time, was more of a late stage firm. So they'd like Series C and D. And then I realized that wasn't for me, and I would rather start a company than work at early stage. And so, yeah, and it's kind of easy decision for me.
Right. So writing the book, when did you do that exactly?
Yeah. So I wrote it in 2016. Writing a book was probably the most like consequential event of my life. So I sat down for 6 months and wrote the book. And then spent another like 3 months editing it, and actually got a book deal, and with a small publishing firm in Canada, and they actually wanted to publish it when they wanted to, when they thought would be useful, which was not what I wanted to do. I wanted to publish it immediately. So just decided to read a bunch more books on self-publishing, and just learned how to, you know, publish and, you know, go through the whole process. And I believe the book was published in March of 2017. And it was really surprised me. It became a bestseller right up there with like Brad Feld's Venture Deals. And now it's like one of the top five books that kids read these days to get into venture capital. And I get pings every day on LinkedIn and just from all over the world. There's people reading it and, you know, wanting to get in and, you know, just saying thanks. So yeah, it was a pretty cool experience. Totally recommend writing a book. I think everyone has like one good book in them.
That's amazing. Yeah. I've certainly considered it myself. I wrote what I call a book, but it's not published. I just, I took a 2-week road trip after graduation and, kind of got back and sat down and kind of Kerouac style wrote a book in like a week and a half. And it's just sitting on my dresser. But other than that, I spent a lot of time writing on a blog. And I think to your point, what's been very cool to me is that I spend, you know, however long I spend writing a blog, obviously different than a book, but, you know, on a micro scale, you still are spending a good amount of time writing and then editing and posting. And what's cool is that it stays out there in the universe forever. And to your point, like you have people for work that you did a few years ago for like a set period of time, it's impacting people for an infinite period of time. All over the world, and they can reach out and say, this was so awesome and it helped me break into VC or whatever it might be. It's just a very cool aspect of, you know, writing in general, books obviously being like the old form and still obviously work super well, but now with online content as well, that's certainly a big part of how I think about content generation in general. Do you remember when you were, you know, when you decided to write the book in the first place, what some of the motivation was? Was it like, oh, I want to write a book and like, this is something I know a lot about? Or was it like, you were just kind of helping people, you know, break into VC and you were like, I got to just put all this on paper and it turned into a book? I'm curious if you remember kind of the initial spark that that led you to go forward with that.
Yeah. So what's interesting is a lot of, I guess it's just me in particular. So I didn't know, I didn't really have a lot of, I didn't know anyone in venture capital at the time. And it was something I was really curious about. So I took very copious notes on anything that I could sort of get my hands on. And so as I talked to more investors and read more books, and I just started a few like clubs, and just generally got to know a lot more people in the space. I had like 60 plus pages of notes, and then I realized, I could publish a short ebook or turn this into like a pretty big, like soft skills, like book on like just how to do the thing. Then I was like, someone had to have written this. Someone had to have written like a book on how to get into this industry. And no one really did to the point of like, you know, this would be like the seminal book of, you know, of the category. And so, you know, you had books on like the business of venture capital. You had books on, venture deals by Bradfeld, like, you know, generally what to do when you get a term sheet, but no one actually talked about like the journey. So I saw that I could fill like a hole in the market and had like a bunch of notes. And then the fun part just came together, you know, just editing it, just writing it out.
Yeah, that's great. So maybe your next book will be something related to what you're working on now, which is where I want to spend the bulk of the conversation. You founded a company called Roll, and the product is basically this concept that you're calling social money. Can you introduce Roll and the concept of social money? And then we can dig in on some of the details.
Yeah, for sure. I will start by quickly summarizing the past 20 years of consumer internet in three words that I will call user-generated content. And user-generated content, as we understand it, so unpacking that as, let's say, Twitch, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, has generated hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars annually now, mostly towards platforms. Generally, what we feel is that Roll is now leading a shift from user-generated content to the next phase, something we'd call at a grand scale, user-generated capital. Now, user-generated capital is very different than user-generated content. You could very much say that the purpose of user-generated content, user-generated capital, is to give the dollar value of a community back to its users. If you think about user-generated content, one of the key things there, the key products, if you will, or actions there, sort of like posting, videos, streams. We feel that the first real big product of user-generated capital is the ability for communities to generate their own currency that's specific to their members. And so we call that concept at face value social money. We've chosen that term over what other people may call, you know, personal tokens or social tokens, because we're aiming to reach 50 million people. As we talk to more people, they don't really understand what cryptocurrency is. The idea of cryptocurrency scares them. What they are familiar with is social media, and what they have in their pocket is money. So the term social money is as simple to understand as ice cream, two words that people already know and understand that are next to each other. So it's a slight shift in thinking, but it's a term that we think will last, and we're excited about it. And that's kind of the whole history of the concept, how we boil it down.
That's a great overview, and I've done a lot of prep, obviously, for the call today, and I'm happy. I think that's the best overview I've heard yet, or read yet. So appreciate you sharing that so clearly and concisely. I think the term social money is awesome to the point that you made, but it is difficult even for someone like me, who, you know, is relatively informed within crypto, at the very least on Bitcoin. It's tough to wrap one's head around that, because I don't know how often you do this, but I'd like to talk about it in the context of Bitcoin, because that's, you know, if people are listening and they're not super familiar with crypto, they're at least partly familiar with Bitcoin probably. And I think this is a useful conversation even for people who are totally familiar with crypto, which is to compare what you're doing with Bitcoin. And it's not obviously the same thing at all. And there's, you know, several dozens of differences. It's a totally different thing, but there are similarities such as like the maximum supply and just the concept of crypto fundamentally. One of the things that is tough for me to wrap my head around, but I'm sure, you know, I'm very bullish on what you're doing and I can see it taking shape, is that, you know, the common reservation and hesitation people have with Bitcoin is like, what is the actual value? Like, you can see gold, you can hold gold, and there's weight to it. Bitcoin, they're like, it's nothing. There's no physical thing. It's not tied to anything. And that just throws people off. But that's been throwing people off for the last decade. And now we have, you know, nearly $1 trillion asset that's grown from literally nothing 11 years ago. So, you know, TBD what the future is for Bitcoin, but at the very least thus far, that hasn't been a breaking point for the ability of something to hold tremendous value. And so when I look at like social money and the types of social money that you got, that you're helping communities and creators mint, I think like, okay, but like, what is the actual, you know, what is it? Like, what is the value? How do you just create something out of thin air and say that it has value? Can you respond to that? And, you know, I know it's maybe like a tough question, but along the lines of like how I might respond to why Bitcoin still has value?
Yeah, of course. It's a really good question. So there are several communities on Roll, I'll say. So when I say communities, I mean creators that have issued social money and dispersed it amongst thousands of people that are worth upwards of, you know, $20 million. So there's sort of several of those on Roll. And that's a very interesting concept. It's a very interesting concept for a YouTuber or a creator to have a market cap. I think the highest or second highest market cap on Roll right now is actually an OnlyFans creator, which is interesting. But how we think about this is the long-term value of social money, literally why we call it social money, is because the long-term value we feel comes from the community. I gave a quick analogy before about, you could think of someone like, you could think of someone like Lady Gaga, right? And so Lady Gaga calls her fans little monsters. So let's pretend Roll works with Lady Gaga and we mint monsters. And we literally call it that because that's the name she gives her nation already. Her name, her community is a digital nation, and that's, you know, that's the name of the nation, little monsters. So she mints monsters. What we're seeing is that the value of a community can be realized through the currency itself. And so what you're creating is the ability for users to become stakeholders. And that responsibility is attractive to people to have a stake in a community. So much so that it warrants the creation of a market. My co-founder uses a term that I like a lot called community as cash flow. So literally the value of social money, why it's taking off and in its own way, independent of any other currency, is the value and how it comes from the community.
Right. And so I understand that, and that makes sense. I understand that, you know, you guys have basically a hard rule for the social money. There's like a set structure, right? So you correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but you mint 2 million of whatever the coin is called up front. And then over a period of, I think, 3 years, the rest vests on, I think, a monthly basis to get to an ultimate max of 10 million. So this is another parallel with Bitcoin where there's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoins. Same type of thing that you guys have worked into the design. Is that critical? You know, you talk about like you're investing in a community to some degree. You might be investing in in the brand, whatever you want to call it, you're investing through this social money. And maybe, you know, you might not have to pay for the money. You might be able to retweet Lady Gaga and she gives out so many coins for so many retweets or whatever it is. Whatever you're doing, you're investing time or money into, and you're being rewarded with the social money from this community. Is the hard cap something that you deliberated on as, you know, crucial to enabling this ecosystem to exist, where if you did have, you know, an endless supply of coins or a supply of coins that was, you know, growing at a certain rate that might be too high or up to the creator's discretion to inflate over time, that the concept wouldn't work? Or is that just kind of a little bit more arbitrary of a feature that you decided, you know, hard cap's probably better than not hard cap, but could probably work either way?
Yeah. So while we weren't the obviously first ones in the world to do this, we were the first ones to create like a set standard. So a bit of the history of, I guess, the concept. So there was a company called Kolu that popularized an idea called colored coins, really these like branded currencies. Then there was a company called Hexel, where I believe the product was just minting as much currency as you could. And then, you know, we looked at those and we're like, well, both of those will never work. So we formally decided to have this cap, and, you know, we envisioned this, and, you know, it's crazy enough in like 2018, right? This was like pre-Uniswap, you know, really becoming a thing and all this, you know, so we were pretty bullish on the idea and how to do it. The hard cap is, you know, something that, you know, definitely needs to be there. What we're realizing, curiously enough, is that Roll is becoming so big that, you know, fraternities are reaching out to us and they're saying, hey, I want to create Toga tokens for my party on Saturday. And so the question we need to ask ourselves is this standard definitive for the entire future of, you know, social currency or social money? And the answer is no. You know, this fraternity wants to, you know, create 500 Toga tokens for, like, you know, to give out to the best dressed and, you know, to, give, you know, incentivize people to come early. They don't really want 10 million over a 3-year period, let's say. So what we'll end up with, and, you know, leaking a little bit here on like the V2 smart contracts for Roll, but what we'll end up with, you know, eventually will be a sort of Chipotle fast casual model, right? Hold the sour cream, double carnitas. People will be able to decide what they want, at least at the beginning. And this will become the cap. And this is what we see as like the long tail of social money.
So what you're talking about, and it makes a lot of sense to me, it's more of like a configurable design. You know, what you have right now may be an option, but you may also be able to mint 1 million or 100 million or even just 1,000 tokens instead of 10 million. And you may be able to have the supply come in over a period of 10 years, or you might be able to have the supply, you know, all at once in the hand of, you know, say the fraternity that wants to distribute them for the sake of a weekend party. Is that kind of the right way of thinking about it?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, we're a startup, and I would say really good startups run experiments. And the first experiment we needed to run, because no one else ran it, is, you know, do regular people want currency, want their own currency? Not just folks that are, you know, toiling in blockchain. And the answer is yes. And then we ran another experiment, like, would people be interested in monetizing their currency and building markets? And so the answer there was yes. And so while we were getting those fundamental answers that would decide whether, you know, the company has a future or not, we realized people wanted currency so badly, you know, that if this was a t-shirt business, what we basically did is create one medium-sized t-shirt that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people are wearing now. And, you know, what we learned is they want, you know, different color t-shirts and different sizes, et cetera. So yeah, definitely. You know, people will want variations of this. And so that's something we're, you know, definitely scheduled to offer in the future.
Yeah. It's something that, that I've certainly considered, spent quite a large amount of time kind of thinking about, a little bit conceptually and obviously differently before I found Roll, and then I found Roll and I was like, this is definitely the closest thing to, you know, what I'm thinking in terms of how I can, to your point earlier, kind of better spread value. First of all, better, you know, own value rather than provide it to the platforms that I might be distributing content through. But then second of all, reward everyone who's a part of the network, because I think to me, you know, even outside of social money, to me, one of the most exciting parts of crypto is that a company like Uber can, you know, give much more value along the journey to its set of drivers. And a company like Airbnb can reward its hosts for the integral role that they played. Like some of the earliest hosts who were willing to take a bet on this new company and set up an airbed, literally like in their living room, and, you know, start generating a little bit of money that way. But it would be really nice if they could also get rewarded for the success of the company thereafter, because they were, you know, some of the people willing to take the earliest bets in enabling its success. So that's something that's super interesting to me. It's been incredible to see, you know, your guys' company. I found it a few months ago. Understand you've been around a bit longer than that, but this is, you know, we're talking about, you mentioned earlier, there's some social money on the platform that's worth in the millions of dollars. The overall market cap last I checked was over $300 million, which is, you know, I don't know how that is to you, but that's just like wild for me to see this company created this ability to mint social money and spread social money and for people and communities to create their own economies using the social money. And within a year, you know, a year ago, it was worth next to nothing, this market. And now it's worth $300 million. What has it been like to see this? You know, you mentioned running a couple of experiments, but like you're seeing a lot of traction, obviously, with some of these earliest adopters. What are some of like the signs that you've seen that have just been like kind of wow moments along the way?
Yeah. So I'd say it's like humbling, and it's more of like a big responsibility. Like a lot of my job is like sitting in a chair alone and thinking about the future of money and like how that could intersect, right? Like how the worlds of social and finance can intersect and like ways we could improve that. We believe in this concept so much that everything else we see in this space, we feel will probably just be a feature of this concept. Uniswap is a feature. Compound is a feature. You know, a derivatives, you know, exchange is a feature. Like all of these, like DeFi as itself, we think will become a feature for communities at this scale. You could almost create a mental model of like, been in the space for a while. There's like a seminal piece from this guy, Joel, called Fat Protocols, about like, you know, the value really in Web3 really coming from sort of the protocol and less so the application. You could almost amend that for social money and coin this term fat communities and really see that you know, the value in Web3 will come from these communities, and there will be, you know, DeFi-like features that build up the value of those communities. But I think largely, I think you'll start to see some of these communities, and they already are, like competing with, you know, in terms of market size with, you know, actual protocols.
Yeah, and certainly some of them seem to be already, even just the overall market for social money that you guys have created is quite high, like surprisingly so for in the scheme of all of the other cryptos out there. When you look at, you know, that's a very interesting painting of what the future looks like. When you look at what's going on today and, you know, starting to extrapolate next steps, what are some of like, I want to ask about some of the more unique things that people are doing. But before that, what are like the most standard, like day one or even day zero things that people are doing with social money that's beginning to prove it out? And then, you know, I also, like I said, I want to talk about some of the more unique things afterwards.
Yeah, so I think we're on a different planet when it comes to like how we think about this, which is really good. I mean, we're really contrarian, I think, with most of the space, and that's kind of been our alpha. But like you could even see like in the space regularly, you know, people are kind of experimenting with this term, like personal token, which you may have heard. And then slowly, you know, people are now starting to call them like social tokens. That's the new name this year. And so what's been interesting is, you know, like if you created social money on Roll last year, you may just call it Jake. But now after seeing Cherry and Whale and Karma and Random Number Generator or RNG, you may actually want to call your social money something that creates this like positive sum or values driven thesis that's true to you, right? You may want to call it, you know, I don't know, something like Light or just some kind of thesis that resonates with you and your past and your community. So that's something that happens on day zero. Obviously announcing it. I wrote a little like short book. It's like 30 pages. It's like a playbook. It's like, I kind of like modeled it after TikTok, their playbook that they give creators, walks through everything. I would say something fascinating that happened last year is when we created Roll, we thought that people would mainly spend social money, similar to how you would spend like loyalty points. And so we created rewards on Roll, so ways to like spend social money. And that was really all you can do. You can mass release out social money using these Bitly style codes. As you can imagine, creating like trial.com/Jake/XYZ. And you can create a code that, you know, 100 different people can claim, you know, 1,000 Jake each. You could create a QR code on the screen. People could screenshot it, get some Jake. Now we're starting to realize that people are very excited about using their social money to allow people to have a stake in their community. And how that's become somewhat productized is people leveraging platforms that are already at scale. So as an example, Discord, Telegram, and they're gating these groups that we'd gate like OnlyFans or Patreon. But the only difference is they're not gating it with dollars, they're gating it with their own social money. So what that means is, it may cost 500 Jake to get into the Discord, but what's awesome about that is the value of Jake is variable. And if Jake is building the Jake Discord like correctly, and there's people in there that are generating a lot of content and interest, and those folks are early Jake holders, as the value of the community grows, those early Jake holders are rewarded. And everyone who holds Jake can have a stake in the success of the community. And of course, you know, you can speculate on the community as well, because Jake can be bought, sold, or traded. This is the universe we're seeing for like the first 300 creators. It's going to be vastly different for the next 1,000. But this is something we validated last year.
So a couple questions off that. It's really interesting. If I'm, you know, like I said, I've been thinking about this conceptually for some time, and you guys are doing it very much so and very successfully. But if I have, you know, a slightly different model for thinking about how I might configure it in terms of like the minting, like we were talking about earlier, you know, the kind of like the Chipotle style that you might come out with in the near future. You know, hypothetically, if I went and created a coin with Roll, how do you talk to early Roll users and creators about kind of locking into this current structure when in the future there may be other structures? Just how do you kind of, I know it's also kind of a tough question, but how do you think about you know, having kind of the optionality for versus like locking into this early structure as compared with waiting for something that could make a little more sense for an individual creator or community person?
Yeah, so I'd say there's no real precedent here. I'd say short of one person on Roll, no one else has had another currency, if that makes sense. So it's not like you're switching from like YouTube to Vimeo or something like that. This is quite literally the first time this digital primitive is like reaching somewhat of a mass audience. And so they don't really have a comparable. So they're pretty excited about it. Where it starts to make sense is like smaller scale, right? So like you could see a world in which people have 50 different currencies, and those currencies may serve different purposes. And those are things that I think there's some years away. I think like the goal of role, to take a term from Carlotta Perez's book, is like the goal of role right now is like to install social money on the web. And so we're just going to do like one thing really well. But after we do that one thing really well, people are going to be like, well, I'm tired of just having one currency. I want 40. And so like when you think about those different types of things, those are where like the parameters may make more sense. But I'd say immediately, like if people come to Roll, they're excited about the Roll brand. They're excited about being a part of a community of other creators. Like, you know, do you just want to host a house by yourself and like, and text people and cash app them, or do you want to be a part of Airbnb and be part of this community of people that are hosting as well? That's kind of been the difference right now. But yeah, you know, by and large, people are just excited to give it a shot and build a community in any way.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, the Airbnb one. If I'm thinking about, you know, to my question earlier about like, you know, people having a difficult time wrapping their heads around the fact that there's not like a gold block that Bitcoin represents. And with you guys, the fact that this social money is, you know, represents like having a piece of a community, not something that's quite as physically tangible as someone who, you know, certainly hasn't seen the development of crypto yet, which no one really has, but someone who maybe was, you know, didn't even see the last 20 years and isn't really familiar with the way the internet works. This concept that like non-physical things can have such high degrees of value is really tough, and people are still just getting to really understand it and some of the implications, which I think you guys are, you know, somewhat visionary in thinking out, and we'll see how much of it comes to fruition. But one thing I'm curious about is, can you, or have you had people already, basically, is there a capability of tying some of the social money to, you know, like something like Bitcoin, for example, or, you know, you could use fiat, but I'll use Bitcoin, where I could basically say, okay, so here's my 10 million Jakes or coins or whatever it is. And, you know, I spread them across my community and followers and things like that, podcast listeners, et cetera. But I actually want to attach that in some degree, or say that I will in the future attach that to real income. So like, for instance, my podcast success in the form of like sponsorship money. So would I be able to kind of automate it so that I could send, you know, for example, one Satoshi out to everyone who owns my coin, you know, proportional to the amount of coins that they have. So if you have like 3 of my coins or 300 of my coins, you get 300 Satoshis, something like that. Is that something that A, is feasible, B, might be in the future, or, you know, C, it's just like not that interesting for you guys?
Yeah, I think we tried that a little bit with a creator on Roll named Alex Massimez, who created Alex, his own social money. And we did something quite a bit different. He actually wanted to do a raise. I believe he was on your podcast, actually.
Yeah, he did like the ISA type of
role. Yeah. And so that's interesting to us, like the idea of tying these like monetary rewards to holding or purchasing social money. We just don't want to make it the first thing you do, right? After Alex, we had, you know, I'd say probably 24 people wanting to know, kind of do something similar, like utilize Roll to like raise money through their currency. And we saw that this immediately was going to be a disaster. You know, so we weren't really tied to it. But now we're starting to have a lot of interesting conversations. So like, you know, we're talking to, I have the interesting, you know, position of like talking to record labels and events. And like, these are things that are going to happen on Roll this year. And so I need to sit down and think about like, gee, how does a record label have a currency? How does that work? Why does it work? What's the future of it? What are they going to want to do? And so like a lot of the models that we may be thinking about, you know, it may be something similar to what you're saying. but it won't be the primary thing you do. Like, you won't want to, like, I'd say get it to get these like Satoshis from it per se. I think what we want to spotlight, just to go back to the Airbnb analogy, will like always be the community of the thing. But once you're in the community of the thing, getting rewarded in these unique ways, let's say maybe by like staking jigs or something, you know, you may be able to get some rewards from that in the future. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, to your point, obviously, like holding the social money of a certain creator is in a way an investment in them and their community's success. Theoretically, it grows over time as the community grows, as the creator grows and influence and following and everything like that. But I just think as a complementary thing, tying it to the monetary success of the creator that whose community you're kind of investing in makes some sense and is some interesting to me as sort of like an intermediary impact. And I don't know, you know, it's probably not necessary, but I think it's pretty interesting. You talk about like some of these record labels that you're having conversations with. I know that you're exploring athletes as well. Can you talk about like some of these more, you know, traditional entertainment industries and how they might incorporate something like this in the future?
Yeah. I mean, we don't, just to be honest, like we're really thinking through it. Like, we have some news that we're going to announce this year, which is, there's like a Fortune 100 company that wants to partner with us. So we're excited about that. But really it's like, they're looking to us for answers, if that makes sense. So we're going to have to sit down and think about those answers. A lot of what I want to do is actually play like a large scale internet game, and I want to crowdsource answers, from people. But by and large, you know, it'll be like myself and the record label owner sitting down, or myself and the brand, you know, manager sitting down and, figuring this stuff out. But the great thing is, you know, we have 300 other experiments, you could say, that we've run that we could like learn from. The people that mint social money on Roll are generally like pretty forward thinking. They're pretty brilliant. I'd say the last 100 are extremely brilliant in terms of, because they've learned from the past 200 and they're just really exciting. So whether it's like bouncing ideas off other people, we've hired people, you know, that have issued on Roll. People that have issued on Roll have invested in Roll after, which is cool. So like it's now. So even if I don't have answers, you know, it's pretty, pretty easy to like, you know, ping, whether it's, you know, so an athlete or Spencer Dinwiddie's a Roll investor, or, you know, agent or someone, and just kind of brainstorm.
Yeah. I think the future of crowdsourcing ideas, to your point, is promising. That's a little bit of a separate tangent, or crowdsourcing work in general, gets pretty cool potentially. One other thing that's, you know, relevant now, especially, we're recording this, January 11th, kind of following the weekend of, Trump being censored and, kicked off Twitter and a number of other platforms, kind of all of these large tech companies, including Amazon, pulling the plug on, Parler app, which is kind of an alternative. And, you know, this is something that a lot of people understand from, got people like you and I to my grandma who's watching news and seeing that, all these tech companies are working together to, silence a number of people. And I don't, you know, I think it's a very complex issue. I don't want you to have to take like a stand or anything like that, but, I'm curious how you might see particularly like Roll and the concept of allowing people to create these social monies to enable their communities to have something kind of outside of all of these platforms. How does that kind of, regardless of where you stand on the issue or what you think, you know, how you think things are going to play out, maybe, do you think social money in some ways is a useful response to kind of the deplatforming that we're seeing?
So there's somewhat of a pseudonymous creator on Roll. You could check her out on Twitter. So her name's Cherry Hot Life on Twitter. And yeah, she's an OnlyFans creator, and she's minted Cherry with us. I think Cherry, the fully diluted market cap for Cherry right now is around $50 million. Cherry's brilliant. She's like, one of the first OnlyFans people to kind of take this leap. She has a massive community. And I'd go so far as to say that Cherry is a platform. If you think about the concept of a platform, it's sort of the ability to hold users and hold value. I think this is all of that is represented through social money. It allows Cherry herself to like to become the platform, which is very interesting. Because if OnlyFans were to take more fees or et cetera, there's now ways she can monetize through Cherry. And in essence, since she has thousands of Cherry holders now, deplatform the platform itself. And so I think that's a very powerful idea, the idea that you can migrate a bunch of users to any other platform through your currency. I think that idea is so powerful that it's quite clear the future of the web will need to integrate this type of money. In the next 5 years, you'll probably enter a world where next generation platform will have to bake in hosting and gating and just accepting the money of creators. I mean, imagine a world where the top 10,000 creators each have their own currency. You'd be insane to be a developer and not like integrate these types of things.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's been a super interesting conversation. I know we're coming up on time. I have a lot of thinking to do, given some of the context that you've added to some of the questions that I had about Roll and the concept of social money in general. But I think it's fascinating, and I don't go too deep into a lot of kind of niche areas within crypto. I think a lot of it is, it's obviously very early. Or at least I think it's extremely early in the life and impact of crypto at large, and a lot of these ideas are kind of early and may disappear with time. But social money, among a few others, is something that really strikes a chord with me as making a ton of sense and having really unbelievable potential. So super cool to see you guys building that and to hear your perspective on it at this very early juncture, but with a lot of positive signs already. One last question before I wrap things up. I read in doing some prep that you're big into music. I know you guys are working with Ja Rule a little bit. I think you well you what you did was you compared crypto to hip hop in a certain way, which was a pretty interesting analogy. And I saw looking at the book that you wrote in the description, it said you were big on records. Are you still a big records guy?
Yeah, for sure. I never shared this, but I actually used to be a composer earlier in life, and I used to like compose electronic music. But yeah, I'm big into music, and I like hip hop because I think it's a large driver of culture, and I think that's undeniable. And I think a lot of Web3 is like missing culture. And I think it could be the job of something like Roll to like install culture properly into Web3. And I think these tools like allow us to like connect the dots in an interesting way. But yeah, huge fan of records. Akon's also a friend, so we're like a cool thing going with him for his project. And yeah, bunch more stuff we're gonna announce this year.
Yeah, it's very cool. I grew up on 90s hip hop myself, and I didn't do so much composing, but I did do a little bit of rapping in high school. So I have a soft spot for people who grew up partly influenced by that culture. And I also just got a record player, so I have to ask you favorite few records that you've had, and then we can tie things up.
Yeah, so I may be maybe leaking some stuff here, but yeah, our friend Matthew runs a record label called Leaving Records. And Matthew's like the nicest guy in the world. So when I met him, he just gave me like a tote bag full of vinyl records. And so I've been listening to most of like the Leaving Records discography, specifically this amazing relax, I love jazz album called, but it's like new age jazz. Like the whole thing with Leaving is it's like new age spins on things. Called, it's by an artist named Sam Gendel and Sam Wilkes. And it's the music for bass guitar and saxophone is the name. So that's cool. My all time favorite vinyl is, Miles Davis's, Elevator to the Gallows. So it's a soundtrack to a Louis Malle film, a French New Wave film that I really like. And he did it in one take and they recorded it in the documentary in the behind the scenes. So that was really cool. And I also love this album called Sleep. And I think it is one of the first records that is composed entirely for you to sleep. And it's like a 7-hour record. I think the vinyl is like compartmentalized, so like it's not the best on vinyl because of the time constraints. But yeah, those are three very disparate like things that I listen to a lot.
Yeah, it's funny. You hit me with some underground stuff, and then the Sleep is obviously a totally different beast. But that's cool. So I appreciate you sharing that. Appreciate you coming on today and talking about Social Money and everything you're doing with Roll. Where can people go follow your story, follow Roll, get involved, everything like that?
Yeah. Follow me at Bradley_Miles_ on Twitter. You can check out triroll.com and sign up for a mailing list. You can go to @TriRollHQ on Twitter to follow us there. If you've made it to the end, we're probably going to do a lot of hiring this year. And we're not just hiring for technical roles. Like I am very interested in like how Gen Z is going to get involved in this. I'm very interested in folks that can sit there and like think about the future of the concept. We can teach you all the product and crypto stuff. I really just want to meet interesting people. And I gave a shout out to people that DM me the other day because we were hiring and I got 100 DMs. So feel free to flood my DMs because I'm responding to all of them now and having a lot of interesting conversations.